Newsmark, where we stand, with CBS News special correspondent, Walter Cronkite.
1989, a new year, a new president, a time to look ahead. But to do so, first we must look back.
For the office of President of the United States, Jesse Lewis Jackson.
We have much to do. I don't have to tell you that this is going to be a tough, competitive stretch drive.
To those who supported me, I will try to be worthy of your trust. And to those who did not, I will try to earn it.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
The manner in which you become addicted to nicotine is exactly the same manner in which you become addicted to cocaine or to heroin.
Read my lips.
We have dared to hope, Mr. General Secretary, and we have been rewarded.
We want peace.
I do not want to be forced to move out of my home.
It's just the thing that is racial, Yonkers.
The gold medal has been withdrawn by the IOC.
The United States is prepared for a substantive dialogue with PLO representatives.
Time to consider where we stand when our Newsmark broadcast continues in a moment.
Time is a precious commodity. The busier you are, the more you treasure it. Now that the Wall Street Journal is conveniently arranged in three time-saving sections, it makes good business sense to start 1989 with a subscription to the Journal. Every business day when the Journal arrives, you'll get the latest news on what's happening in the economy. You'll learn about new developments in technology, marketing, small business, and the law. And you'll appreciate the Journal's expanded financial tables and charts that you can refer to at a glance. The Wall Street Journal helps busy people like you find all the business news you need with less effort and in less time. Right now, you can still get 13 weeks of the Journal for just $29.75. So don't waste time. Call toll-free in the continental U.S. 800-228-8300. That's 800-228-8300 for today's Wall Street Journal.
Six. Start. 3, 2, 1, 0. And liftoff. Liftoff. Americans return to space as Discovery clears the tower.
Pride returned to America's space program the day Discovery got off the launch pad. Christopher Glenn reports.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
The nation breathed a sigh of relief when that word was passed up to Shuttle Discovery as it rocketed away. That had been the last call from Mission Control to Shuttle Challenger just before it exploded. The five-man Discovery crew, shuttle veterans all, performed their main task flawlessly, deploying a tracking and data relay satellite identical to one destroyed aboard Challenger. 2 months later, Shuttle Atlantis successfully flew a secret and very silent military mission. But shadowing the elation of America's return to space was uncertainty about the future. For one thing, the competition has gotten a lot stiffer. The European Space Agency's unmanned Ariane rockets had several successes. The Soviets set a manned spaceflight endurance record and tested their own look-alike version of the shuttle.
The space shuttle Buran went off into space unmanned.
Even the U.S. Air Force was backpedaling, developing its own fleet of unmanned launch vehicles. Still, we went back in 1988 and could all say, with Discovery Commander Rick Hauck,
"It's nice to be in orbit."
And NASA is planning to be back in orbit seven times in 1989. As 1988 becomes 1989, an era is ending for the United States. After 8 years, President Ronald Reagan becomes Citizen Ronald Reagan. CBS News White House correspondent Bill Plant reports on the lasting effects of the Reagan Revolution.
I, Ronald Reagan, do solemnly swear.
1981, the Reagan Revolution fired its first shots. Ronald Reagan and his administration proceeded to make good on his promises. They cut taxes and began spending to build up the military, cut back on federal regulations of all kinds, and sought to limit the role of government in the life of the nation. They weathered the recession, which drove down double-digit inflation rates, and they credited the supply-side philosophy as the economy heated up still predicting that growth would soon take care of the rising deficit. Swept to a second term on a campaign of images, Mr. Reagan won tax reform, but saw Congress lose its fear of his political clout when he lost the Senate 2 years later. Worse yet, Ronald Reagan lost the confidence of a majority of the American people when the Iran-Contra affair came to light. But then he came to terms with the new Soviet leader, signing the first treaty ever to actually reduce nuclear weapons. But above all, Ronald Reagan will probably be remembered for using those economic policies to change the terms of the political debate for a long time to come, with consequences that will be debated for at least as long.
George Bush won a decisive victory in 1988 after a long, divisive campaign.
A campaign is a disagreement, and disagreements divide. But an election is a decision, and decisions clear the way for harmony and peace.
It was a nasty campaign, a campaign of images over issues, style over substance. CBS News chief political correspondent Bruce Morton reports.
Oh, what a time it was. What a negative time. Bob Dole won the Republican side of the Iowa caucuses, and so George Bush went negative on Dole. Richard Gephardt won among the Democrats, so Michael Dukakis went negative on him. Bush and Dukakis became the nominees, and then Bush went negative on Dukakis. Very negative, very early, and kept pouring it on throughout the campaign.
As Governor Michael Dukakis vetoed mandatory sentences for drug dealers.
It was a campaign dominated by negative ads, staged events, and sound bites. Reporters kept writing about how negative it was, how manipulative, how phony, but Bush just kept slinging mud. Dukakis offered a few actual proposals, but they were pretty much drowned out. If you have high negatives, the rule goes, it's easier to drive the other guy's negatives up than to get yours down. Bush had high negatives when it started. He did drive the other guys up until they were worse than his own, and he won. He won without promising to do anything much except not be Michael Dukakis. Ronald Reagan, running in 1980, promised to increase defense spending and to cut income taxes. Elected, he could look at Congress and say, hey, that's what the people want. Let's get on with it. Congress pretty much did. George Bush comes to office without that kind of mandate, and so it remains to be seen how well he and the heavily Democratic Congress will get along.
It has been an often tense 8 years on Capitol Hill. The Republican president at one end of Pennsylvania Avenue, and since the 1986 election, a Democratic House and Senate at the other end. But CBS News congressional correspondent Phil Jones reports, all was not debate and deadlock.
Historic reform of the welfare system, catastrophic health insurance, anti-drug legislation, a trade bill to help protect American industry and jobs, and recommended ratification of a treaty to ban all intermediate ground-launched missiles. Those were the major accomplishments of the 100th Congress. Not a bad record at all, but it could have been a lot better with a little more cooperation between the often stubborn Republican president and the frustrated Democrats who were in control of Congress. At least half the problem is about to leave town. Ronald Reagan is retiring, and there's a feeling that a new era of cooperation is about to come. Republican congressional leaders, who are far more moderate than Ronald Reagan, are expressing a sense of relief. Democrats were always frustrated because Mr. Reagan never consulted. He always talked with them after he had made the decisions. But now, as the 101st Congress comes to town, Ronald Reagan is being replaced by a Republican president who was once a member of Congress himself. George Bush has lots of close friends on the Hill. He clearly loves the often tedious process of government, the give and take of negotiating and compromising.
Few disagree with George Bush that reining in the massive federal budget deficit is an economic priority. But as Frank Settapany reports, there's plenty of disagreement over just how that should be done.
Read my lips.
To critics, the question is whether President-elect Bush can read the handwriting on the wall.
The deficit already has begun to eat away at the foundations of our economic strength.
Federal Reserve Board Chairman Alan Greenspan echoes those on both sides of the political aisle who say candidate Bush may have painted President Bush into a corner. If he keeps the campaign promise that helped him win the White House, they ask, how can he still cut the federal deficit?
You can't take a static view of this.
Michael Boskin, named to serve as chief White House economist in the new administration, was the architect of the president-elect's flexible freeze concept. The approach stresses restraint on the spending side and assumes that economic growth will take care of the revenue side of the budget.
Taxes grow year after year. Revenue has been growing, grows faster than the economy grows.
Critics point out that massive amounts of foreign money finance the deficit. To continue to attract that money, we'll have to keep interest rates high. But high interest rates could choke economic growth and make the deficit even worse. House Ways and Means Committee Chairman Dan Rostenkowski says it all comes back to the T word. But he warns that the president, not the Democrats in Congress, will have to carry the ball when it comes to raising taxes.
The public trust again took a beating in 1988. The sleaze factor became a code name for ethical lapses in the Reagan administration. Case in point, the Justice Department. Charles Osgood reports.
Attorney General Edwin Meese resigned in August under a cloud surrounding his conduct in office. Meese was never indicted. No matter, said former Deputy Attorney General Arnold Burns.
There was a world of Alice in Wonderland, a world of illusion, an allusion. A world in which up was down and down was up. In was out and out was in. Happy was sad and sad was happy.
A world, some would say, in which right was wrong and wrong was right. And it wasn't just a Republican Wonderland. 10-term Democratic Congressman Mario Biaggi was sentenced to 8 years in jail for bribery and extortion. And there were others. A major scandal shook the Pentagon, allegations of widespread fraud and bribery in the awarding of military contracts. There were indictments for insider trading on Wall Street. And for television evangelist Jim Baker, an indictment on charges of defrauding as many as 150,000 contributors. When we looked to our leaders in 1988, we saw too often a poverty of values.
We'll look at where the world stands next when our Newsmark broadcast continues.
13 people. Every day's a savings day for 13 people.
For all your favorite scents of the season, Charlie, Jantou, Enjoy, and Jean Nate, go to Thrifty and Thrifty Jr. for the specially marked Revlon year-end fragrance specials. The perfect scents in spray colognes, silky lotions, talcs, and soaps. Specially priced from $3.29 to $3.49, now at your holiday store. Thrifty. When the temperature goes up, it's time for Tempra. A child's fever needs instant relief. Use Tempra, the fever and pain reliever in pleasant-tasting syrup, drops, or chewable tabs at Thrifty and Thrifty Jr. Tempra is sugar-free, alcohol-free, and aspirin-free, and that makes Tempra the safe, effective way to reduce your child's fever and help them feel better fast. When your child's temperature goes up, be sure that Tempra goes in. Open New Year's Day for your shopping convenience.
This was the year of superpower detente on a grand scale. The United States and the Soviet Union not only talked, they acted, astounding the world with an historic treaty eliminating an entire class of nuclear weapons. Correspondent Barry Peterson reports.
It was the Moscow summit in spring. The cold warrior Ronald Reagan setting foot for the first time in his life on the soil of a country he has attacked over and over during his political career. After the election of George Bush, Gorbachev, by his own invitation, came to New York for a speech to the United Nations General Assembly.
Today I can report to you that the Soviet Union has taken a decision to reduce its armed forces.
Gorbachev promised a cut of 500,000 men from the 5 million men now under arms. Then it was on to lunch with President Reagan and President-elect Bush, who had traveled to New York. And Gorbachev offered his view of what the year ahead will bring.
I would use the word that we heard there.
Preemptiveness.
Continuity.
Gorbachev's December visit to New York was cut short by the tragic earthquake in Soviet Armenia. But the spirit of glasnost was in the air. For the first time since World War II, the Soviets accepted, with open gratitude, U.S. offers of help. This was the year that peace broke out. From Africa through the Middle East to Asia, diplomats picked up their pens and soldiers laid down their arms. Wyatt Andrews has a report.
The Russians began their retreat from Afghanistan with fanfare and revelry. Bands played, Russian troops waved goodbye, as if it were all an achievement, not the end of a bloody 9-year-long occupation. In Afghanistan, the Russians, for once, had been beaten by a local population, unwilling to accept them as the future. When Soviet Foreign Minister Shevardnadze signed the peace accords last April, he tried to deny the Russians had been defeated.
So there is no defeat.
But the world still knows a beating, a true reversal, when it sees one. This need to face reality, to cut losses, grew infectious this year, and the world is better for it. Iran's Ayatollah Khomeini, after suffering a million casualties and squandering billions of dollars, finally called off the Iran-Iraq war. The Cubans agreed to quit Angola, South Africa will grant freedom to Namibia, and the Vietnamese began a slow withdrawal from Cambodia. The Reagan ethic of peace through strength brought the U.S. successes, but there are failures out there. The Sandinistas remain repressive in Nicaragua. Lebanon is near collapse. Terrorism is declining, and yet terrorists still hold captive 9 Americans in Beirut. Peace through strength has yet to help them.
In 1988, the turmoil in the Mideast also brought change. At year's end, PLO Chairman Yasser Arafat threw Israel a new challenge.
We want peace. We want peace.
Correspondent Bob Simon covers the Mideast for CBS News.
Israeli soldiers sent in to curb the Arab uprising were the targets of rocks and firebombs. Troops often answered with clubs and bullets. Israel faced growing criticism even from its closest diplomatic friend, the United States. In November, the Palestinian National Council seemed to give implicit recognition to Israel, but failed to include any renunciation of terrorism. The action drew support from many countries, but the U.S. reception was cool. The U.S. derailed Arafat's bid to address the U.N., rejecting a visa for the PLO leader. The General Assembly responded by holding a special session in Geneva. With the world listening, Arafat renounced all forms of terrorism, but failed to recognize Israel. A day later, he uttered what Washington considered to be the magic words.
The right of all parties to exist in peace, including Israel.
Secretary of State Shultz followed with a breakthrough announcement.
The United States is prepared for a substantive dialogue with PLO representatives.
The question now seems up to the Israelis. Will they relent and honestly negotiate with the Palestinians? We'll turn to social issues when our Newsmark broadcast continues in a moment.
Time is a precious commodity. The busier you are, the more you treasure it. Now that the Wall Street Journal is conveniently arranged in three time-saving sections, it makes good business sense to start 1989 with a subscription to the Journal. Every business day when the Journal arrives, you'll get the latest news on what's happening in the economy. You'll learn about new developments in technology, marketing, small business, and the law. And you'll appreciate the Journal's expanded financial tables and charts that you can refer to at a glance. The Wall Street Journal helps busy people like you find all the business news you need with less effort and in less time. Right now, you can still get 13 weeks of the Journal for just $29.75. So don't waste time. Call toll-free in the continental U.S. 800-228-8300. That's 800-228-8300 for today's Wall Street Journal.
Restaurant signs that say whites only have disappeared from the American scene, but there are other, more subtle signs that say racism has not disappeared. Correspondent Judy Muller reports.
Racism may be as close as your local record store. Racist rock spreads the message of hatred through a subculture of young white toughs called skinheads. In Portland, Oregon, three skinheads stand accused of murder after an Ethiopian immigrant was clubbed and kicked to death. In Yonkers, New York, the issue was housing, public housing, and where to build it.
Yonkers on a whole is prejudice.
I do not want to be forced to move out of my home.
It's just the thing that is racial in Yonkers.
Racism persists, but we are not the divided nation we were 25 years ago.
Jesse Lewis Jackson!
Jesse Jackson visibly and emotionally demonstrated America's racial progress this summer in Martin Luther King's hometown of Atlanta.
Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., lies only a few miles from us tonight. Tonight he must feel good as he looks down upon us. We'll sit here together a rainbow coalition. The sons and daughters of slave masters and the sons and daughters of slaves sitting together around the common table to decide the direction of our party and our country. His heart would be full tonight.
The direction of our country, consciously or unconsciously, it's a decision we must all make. 1988 will be remembered as the year United States Surgeon General Dr. C. Everett Koop made the medical case against smoking crystal clear.
The manner in which you become addicted to nicotine is exactly the same manner in which you become addicted to cocaine or to heroin. There is no such thing as a safe cigarette.
For the more than 50 million Americans who smoke, 1988 was not a very good year, as Susan Spencer reports.
1988 saw the first ban on smoking on many airplanes. By year's end, 42 states had restricted smoking somewhere. Restaurants, buses, city buildings. Canada banned tobacco advertising, period. For cigarettes, Senator Bill Bradley proposed a new warning label. If you start smoking, you may not be able to stop. Testimony to that came in a landmark court case. A New Jersey jury ordered a cigarette company to pay $400,000 in damages to the husband of a woman who died of lung cancer. She had smoked a pack and a half every day for 40 years. She was so addicted, she smoked even after a lung cancer operation. She wanted to quit, as do millions. The industry, not big on smokers quitting, has come out swinging. R.J. Reynolds reportedly is spending $1 billion on its smokeless cigarette. Philip Morris has a new $5 million campaign promoting the idea that smokers also are consumers, not to be alienated. No truce is likely anytime soon.
AIDS continues to be the medical scourge of the world. Close to 80,000 Americans have AIDS. Dr. Peter Salgo reports.
The United States still lacks an overall federal plan to deal with AIDS. Proposals range from quarantining persons infected with the HIV virus that causes AIDS to programs offering free, clean needles to drug abusers. Despite AIDS education efforts, the American public continues to have mixed emotions about the disease. The home of three hemophiliac children with AIDS was burned down in Florida. At the same time, massive volunteer projects to help AIDS victims were being launched elsewhere. The medical fight against AIDS continued, but as had been predicted, there were no dramatic advances in 1988.
As the new year begins, the slow, steady progress of medical research continues. But most researchers agree that it will be at least 10 or 20 years before we can expect major progress in the fight against AIDS and major control of the disease. It was all too clear to the presidential candidates of 1988 that Americans were fed up with what they saw as a failing drug policy. And as we hear from correspondent Bill Lynch, the issue touched not only the nation's communities, but its athletes and U.S. foreign policy.
It was early March when President Reagan declared, "We are beginning to win the crusade for a drug-free America." A month earlier, the military leader of Panama was indicted in Tampa and Miami for drug trafficking and money laundering. U.S. Attorney Leon Kellner made the announcement about Manuel Noriega on February 5th.
He utilized his positions to sell the country of Panama to the traffickers. The results are evident. They are destroying our children with the narcotics, and that has to stop.
The indictment charged Noriega with allowing Panama to become a key spot for moving drugs and money from Colombia's violent Medellin cartel. Efforts to oust Noriega since the indictment have failed, and the situation remains a political stalemate. If young Americans wonder whether to just say no, they need only to remember the case of Canadian Ben Johnson. The world's fastest sprinter was found to have used steroids at the Summer Olympic Games in Seoul.
The gold medal has been withdrawn by the IOC.
In November, an Olympic anti-doping charter was approved by sports officials from some 70 nations.
As President George Bush faces a formidable task, he's promised to appoint a drug czar, but money will be needed, even as strategy is debated for the long battle ahead.
I tell everyone, you don't miss the water till the well goes dry. That's an old saying.
A delicate balance, nature and man, a balance in which we must make our lives and our children's lives. CBS News correspondent Charles Corrupt.
Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. So wrote the great American poet Robert Frost in 1923. In 1988, in America, the fires, the drought, the exceptionally hot weather, the news about the ozone layer, warnings about the greenhouse effect, turn people's thoughts to nature and how we want to live. For most of the summer in the Middle West, there wasn't any rain. Wells went dry, crops died, cattle died. Then on the East Coast, all along the beaches, the ocean regurgitated a slick of medical waste and human waste. Our water wasn't safe to swim in. The environmental agency then announced that the water 138 million people drink was not safe to drink. Too much lead. The air in many places, heated by unusual temperatures, became unsafe to breathe. Dr. James E. Hansen, climate expert for NASA, made public his belief that the greenhouse effect, for years only considered a possibility, is a reality now. This year seems to have marked a limit. The air, earth, and water are no longer naturally regenerating elements. Man has upset the balance. The balance must be redressed soon.
Some thoughts on the year ahead when our Newsmark broadcast continues in a moment.
Every fiscal year end, your staff works long hours to meet crucial deadlines. This year, you can avoid costly overtime and meet year-end project deadlines by calling Accountants Overload. Accountants Overload can provide temporaries to handle every year-end accounting need, including closing entries, accounts receivable and payable, audit schedules, corporate tax returns, W-2 preparation, and quarterly returns. So whether you need a data entry or accounting clerk, a bookkeeper, a senior accountant, or a CPA, our professional consultants will personally select individuals trained and qualified to meet your special needs. This year, get a head start on fiscal year-end projects by calling Accountants Overload. We've been serving Southern California business for over a quarter century. Accountants Overload, when accounting problems are only temporary.
Remember, Accountants Overload also specializes in providing experienced temporary tax professionals. Call today.
Some political pundits say Michael Dukakis never had a chance. As vice president, they say George Bush had peace and prosperity in his pocket, and it's hard to beat an incumbent campaigning on peace and prosperity. There was no arguing with the peace issue. 1988 was truly the year peace broke out. Iran and Iraq finally ran out of money and young men and settled their 8-year war of attrition. The Soviet Union read the history lesson written in Vietnam, and it began pulling out of Afghanistan. On a larger front, the United States and the Soviet Union actually have begun destroying nuclear missiles. Mikhail Gorbachev put disarmament very much on the front burner in a December speech to the United Nations. The Soviet Union, he said, will make major unilateral cuts in troops and tanks in Europe. It was a masterstroke of preemptive propaganda. Yasser Arafat and the PLO took the diplomatic initiative, recognizing Israel's right to exist and denouncing terrorism. All of this is good news. George Bush strides onto a diplomatic field rich in opportunity. There is a danger in all this, however. President Bush may become preoccupied with foreign affairs to his and our peril. For the prosperity half of George Bush's peace and prosperity campaign is paper thin. And if George No New Taxes Bush does not deal with America's deep economic problems, we will wake up one day to find the Japanese and West Germans calling in that paper. We have become the world's greatest debtor nation. And as anyone with plastic in their pockets knows, debts do come due. George Bush must move immediately to manage our domestic problems. If he does not, they'll take control of him and they'll dictate our entire agenda for years to come. Newsmark, Where We Stand, has been produced by Barbara Bernhardt, Kit Borgman, Frank Devine, Steve Kathan, Evelyn Lee, Joanne Malley, Linda Perlman, Pam Rauscher, Peter Shacknow, and Richard Stapleton. Technical assistance by Ralph Persico. The executive producers of Newsmark are Norman Morris and Richard Stapleton. This is Walter Cronkite, CBS News.
CBS News, this is David Jackson. 51 bodies recovered so far from a party boat capsizing off Rio de Janeiro last night. Scores more are still missing. We just talked to the BBC's Jan Rocha in Sao Paulo and got the latest.
The search has been called off, apparently because of fairly bad weather, and it's going to be resumed in the morning. But what firemen have been saying during the day is that they feel that because there's a very strong current running, it's unlikely now that other bodies will be found for a couple of days, and they'll probably be washed up in fairly distant places.
The boat was taking New Year's celebrants out for an offshore view of Rio's fireworks when it capsized. Officials say it was a flat-bottom boat, badly overloaded with as many as 150 people aboard. FBI Director William Sessions says he'd be pleased to have Yasser Arafat's help in solving the bombing of Pan Am 103. British newspapers quote an American official as saying Arafat has so offered. One paper says the PLO sent a note to that effect to President Reagan. The White House says it knows nothing of any offer. FAA Chief Alan McCarter says the U.S. has sent a terrorist alert to the airports in Athens and other Mediterranean cities. He says known terrorists are moving in the area using false passports. No other details. To tax or not, it's a question the 101st Congress will have to tackle after it convenes on Tuesday. Senate Minority Leader Bob Dole says he doesn't think George Bush will bend a bit on his promise of no new taxes. If that's so, Texas Republican Phil Graham of the Senate Budget Committee says Congress will just have to tighten its belt a bit.
Revenues without a tax increase are going to be up about $85 billion. You've got to reduce the deficit by about $50 billion to meet the Graham-Rudman targets. So that means you've got to limit the growth of federal spending to about 3% more than you spent last year.
Graham appeared on CNN's Newsmaker Sunday. Mummery, from the old French word meaning to go out masked. Well, on New Year's Day in Philadelphia, it means a lot more than that. It's the Mummers Parade, and WCAU's Joe Young has the story.
20,000 marchers, including clowns and other mummers dressed in gaily decorated costumes, waving parasols, cakewalked their way down the parade route. Thousands of spectators along an approximate two-mile area of South Broad Street felt they were cheated when city and parade officials decided to bus up most of the string band mummers to a location near the City Hall judges' stand because of the inclement weather and what it might do to expensive costumes. But most everyone, even Anne Marie Daly of Ireland, who saw her first mummers parade, loved the show.
Brilliant.
What do you like the best about
their costumes? I've never seen any of them like them before.
But the music?
Yeah, they're brilliant.
Mummery has been an official tradition in Philadelphia since the turn of the 20th century. Joe Young for CBS News, Philadelphia.
Lottery officials in Florida have checked their computers, found five winning tickets to last night's $27 million jackpot. Three past the hour, CBS News.